As you may know, I was gone last week, and for that week, I spent some time on retreat, and I'd like to share a little bit of what that was like and what I got from that. So I was at a retreat house far away from here, and it was mostly a private retreat, so it was just me alone in silence and prayer, and I had one priest I met with for a daily direction time. And when I first met with this priest director, I brought this big stack of books that I had brought in for the retreat, and I thought to myself, I am so well prepared for this retreat. I'm going to get so much done. I'm going to read all these things. I'm so well prepared. And the director saw that stack of books and he said, put those books away. He said, keep the Bible, get rid of the rest of them. You don't need them. And then he said to me, this retreat is not a project. This is a time to sit with Jesus. And then with that, he gave me just one question to ponder during my retreat. And it came from an encounter in the Gospels of Jesus with Bartimaeus, who was a blind man that Jesus healed. And before Jesus healed Bartimaeus, Jesus asked him the question, what do you want me to do for you? And that was the question that my director gave me, to imagine Jesus asking me this question of what do you want me to do for you? He said, let Jesus ask you that. And he also said, as you do that, try to stay out of your head and ask it with your heart and see what Jesus does there. So that was my main thing I did for those 5 days of retreat. And I do believe that I got a response. There was a couple pieces in this response. And the first piece that I received in this response was a sense of Jesus saying to me, it's going to be okay. And then along with that sense, there was maybe an image or an idea. And it was an image or an idea of a little boy who is very worried about something. And he's worried because he only understands a part of the situation, but he thinks he sees it all. And the little part that he thinks he knows is what's scary to him. And then there's a loving adult in this little kid's life who understands more, who sees the whole picture. And it's the loving adult saying to the little boy, it is going to be okay. So that is it. That was my 5 days of retreat, what that 5 days of prayer brought me. And also Isaiah 55 became really a key passage. But why would I share this to begin? Well, I share this because the same kind of recentering that I needed on that retreat is really what these readings and what these baptisms call us to and offer to us today. And what we have in these readings, and these are, I know, some challenging readings, but really what they give to us are at the same time a radical openness and a deadly serious challenge. And what unites these two things, what holds them together, is this idea that the Christian life is not a project, but it is a union with our loving Lord. And when we come to see that, then we hear him say, it is going to be okay. So first of all, though, how do we see this radical openness in the readings today? And the way we see that is they present to us a tendency that can happen in our faith towards exclusivity. And how do we see that? Well, first we see that in the first reading. And in the first reading, you have this beautiful story of God's Spirit moving powerfully in the Israelite encampment. And maybe some context to understand what's happening here. So this happens during their journey from Egypt to the Promised Land. And we know they were slaves in Egypt. They were miraculously set free. They passed through the Red Sea. And then they found themselves on a very long, very hard journey as their whole nation was traveling for years through the desert. And we know that Moses was their leader. But as this journey goes on, we see Moses realizing, I can't be the only leader. I can't do this by myself. I need help. And then this reading, we see God saying to Moses, it's going to be okay. And then he pours out his Spirit. He raises up other leaders to help Moses. So that's the background. And that's where we have this young man coming to Moses and saying, there are people prophesying in the camp. And the reason he's bothered by that, of course, is they picked certain people who should receive the Spirit, and they were all over here. And then there's some people over here who are in the wrong place who are also prophesying. So it's as though what this young man is saying to Moses, he's saying to him, God poured out his Spirit on the wrong people. But of course, God didn't. That's not how it works. But it's how we can tend to see things. All right, we see the same sort of thing in the gospel, a very similar story, and some context to what we heard in the gospel. And the context is that Jesus has sent out his disciples with a share in his authority, so they would heal and preach or drive out demons in his name. And notice what they say to Jesus. The first thing they say to him is, we saw someone driving out demons in your name. And if we just heard that, we might think, well, this is good news, right? This is someone sharing Jesus' ministry. His ministry is growing. People are being healed and helped. This is a good thing. Except that's not how the disciples saw it. And the disciples went on to say, and we tried to stop him because he was not following us. And notice that last word there. They don't say, we tried to stop him because he wasn't following you, Jesus. But no, we tried to stop him because he wasn't following us. So we see in both of these situations, there's an understanding of this is where God should be at work, but he's actually at work over here too, and we don't like that because he's not working where we think he should be. So we have these lines of he wasn't following us, the wrong people are prophesying. So what is this temptation that these readings are warning us about for us today? But really what the temptation is, it's a temptation of projecting my limitations onto God. And that is to say, to take my views and my priorities, my sense of who's in and who's out, who's right and who's wrong, taking that and thinking that what I see must be how God should see things, and wanting God's work to fit within my categories. Let's look even more directly then, really practically, how might we see that happening today? We live in a world, you probably, I assume you would agree here, where our divisions in this world seem to be getting more and more heightened and more sharpened. Think of maybe political divisions. I'm for this party, I'm for that party. Those divisions become even more sharpened. Or medical decisions, masked or unmasked, vaccinated, not vaccinated. Those divisions, more and more heightened, more and more sharpened. Or even the news and information that we consume, the sources that we trust, how we see the world, what we believe to be true. Those divisions, more and more heightened, more and more sharpened. And the real danger is when I take my views on these things and I project them onto God. Because what that can start to do is to bring these divisions into our faith life as well. And a special danger this can lead us to is if we begin to think that if someone is on the other side than me, then the only reason someone could be there is it must mean that they are somehow less intelligent or less moral than I am. Very dangerous thing, but very real temptation. And notice here, I'm trying very hard to speak really into the divisions that we have without telling you what side I come down on, just because that's not the point here. It's not about which side we're on, but it's about loving one another and seeing the risk of these divisions, even in the face of these separations. And what is then the answer that Jesus calls us to? Well, the answer is not relativism. It's not to say, well, you have your truth and I have mine, and you have your views and I have mine. That's not how we see it. Truth is truth. And it is a call that even in the face of these differences, we need to love those who disagree with us. And we need to understand those who disagree with us. Or most of all, we need to trust that God is at work in the lives and hearts of those who have views other than mine. That's sometimes harder to do than we would think, but it is what love is, what our faith, our gospel calls us to. So there is the radical openness. Now what about this deadly serious challenge? Well, we heard that, for example, from this letter from James. This whole passage from James was really quite challenging, as we hear James saying things like this: "Oh, you rich people, weep and wail for the miseries that are coming to you." And when we hear him talking about, oh, you rich people, let's realize that looking globally, we are all the rich people compared to a large parts of the planet. Oh, you rich people, weep and wail for the miseries that are coming to you. And he's really saying there, you have hurt the poor, you've hurt other people, and you're going to get it. It's a serious challenge. Well, we also had the latter part of the gospel, these words of Jesus, where he's saying in various ways, if anything causes you to sin, get rid of it. And really what this is saying to us is that sin is deadly serious. And the only response we should have to sin is to completely eliminate it as far as we can. That sin should have no place in our hearts, no place in our lives. That's the second call. So then how do we do both of these things? How do we hold both? On the one hand, we have this radical openness to other people and to God's work wherever he wants to work it. And at the same time, this absolute rejection of sin, and this call to great holiness. Well, I have two ideas, and we'll close with these. And the first one comes from a book by Pope Francis. And it's a book that he wrote in the early days of the pandemic called Let Us Dream. And in it, he says this: if we are to come out of this crisis less selfish than we went in, we have to let ourselves be touched by others' pain. And I'll say that one more time. I think it's worth hearing a few times. If we are to come out of this crisis less selfish than we went in, we have to let ourselves be touched by others' pain. And these others needs to include people very different from me. And this is true even if we are utterly convinced that someone is wrong, and even if we're objectively right that someone else's views are wrong, or if we see it that way, even if that is true, their pain is real, and their concerns are real, and we need to be able to be touched by it. If we are to come out of this crisis less selfish than we went in, we have to let ourselves be touched by others' pain. And the second response the Word of God calls us to hear is that response of Moses and of Jesus and of my retreat director, and that is to remind ourselves again that the Christian life is not a project, but it is a call to deep union with God. And those of you here to get your children baptized, this is what we are drawing these children into, this life of deep union with God that calls us to great holiness. And in that union, we come to see God saying to us, it is going to be okay. And also in this union, as we let it, God does transform us. He transforms us more and more, step by step, away from sin, opening our hearts into love.